I'm going to bring up my next panel, which is the Anti-Gunners Homeland Security Gambit with our good friend Charles Heller, now Executive Director of JPFO, and Benjamin Smith, Director of Strategic Affairs for Unite in Action and a contributor to Breitbart and Fox News. You gentlemen each have 9 minutes and don't have objection. We'll go in order and Charles can go first.
Thank you. I just wanted to follow on to Professor Patrick's excellent point about zombies. Just wanted to bring something up, reference Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, and that's it's been determined that the Jewish zombies are not a danger because they only feed on bagels. So they are inappropriate targets. If you see one with a mug and David, it's a no-shoot. I want to say that it ain't over until it's over. And that's an interesting Joe Garagiola-ism, but the other side of that coin is it'll never be over. We tend, in the Right to Keep and Bear Arms movement and the civil rights self-defense movement, by the way, that's called Corwinizing your language, we tend in the civil rights self-defense movement to look at things in terms of good and evil in some epic battle, and it's over, and then we happily ever after. And I hope everyone realizes, I think everyone does, that there isn't ever a time when it's over. This is a classic struggle versus, and not so much good versus evil, although it is that, but ever since man has formed into tribes and someone wanted to be the leader, there has always been and there always will be someone who wants to tell you what to do. You see it everywhere. You see it. Professor Patrick just pointed it out. And especially when you get into certain communities that tend to have a top, we call those egghead communities, especially when you get into those communities, someone wants to control you. It's not about whether they're of the left or of the right, because there are both. Yes, you'll see more of it on the left, but it still exists because it's part of human nature. So the question is how do we preserve, how do we instill culture in our progeny that continues to make the principles that make us gather here together to keep those principles in force? And part of it is that once the battle is joined for your rights, it's not over until you quit. Someone asked, Mike Vanderbilt stood up and asked an interesting question yesterday. And he said, you know, what are you going to do when Obama wins? What's the difference? Poll the room here. If Obama were to win, would it change your resolve to fight towards freedom? Would it change anyone's resolve in this room? As they say in Spanish, verves. So what? Okay, yes, it would be a bad result. But the point is, you're not going to stop teaching your children how to shoot. You're not, or your grandchildren, you know, with all due respect. I'm old enough for that too. But, you know, it's not going to change who we are or the dynamic between those who would control you and those who would teach people how to control themselves. That's really what the battle is, in my view. And, the one thing we can really do is control our attitude and not be, and politely not be subservient. I heard Bob Harvey off microphone talk about something that happened to him here at this facility. And that was he gave his key to the valet and the valet went to park his vehicle and he walked away to smoke a cigarette, habit he picked up in the Marine Corps. And thank him for his service. And he turned around and there was a guy from TSA who had opened up the box on his truck and was going through the box, the toolbox on the back of his pickup truck. And Bob, in typical Marine fashion, said some things to the TSA fellow that I won't repeat here on the microphone. But, what the blank are you doing in my truck? And the TSA agent pointed to the sign and said, you see that? All vehicles are subject to search. And Bob said, really? Do you have a warrant? And the agent said, no, they're all subject to search. And Bob said, when did a sign overcome a form of government? Get the away from my truck. And you know what? He did. course, Bob also threatened him. He says, I don't know if you realize what conference you're at, but there's 7 Second Amendment lawyers within 3 floors of this building that come down and have your nets behind if you don't get away from it. And the TSA agent actually believed him. And because he politely and firmly stood his ground, stand your ground. What a concept. Because he politely and firmly stood his ground, the government agent backed off. And I think sometimes even we as activists fail to do that. We fail to politely say, wait a minute, just hold on a second here. The other thing we can do as activists in terms of TSA and other organizations is learn their policy. Find out their policies are published. Learn their policies, especially about when someone's rights are being violated or when they're exceeding their authority. Learn it and know what the number is in their policy manual of what that is and say, hold on a second. Before you continue, I want you to realize you're in violation of TSA policy and quote the policy number to them. Call your supervisor. At that point, they begin to worry that you may be a TSA supervisor or worse, an attorney and cause them a lot of problems. And this is one way we can back them down. I call this, I actually have a name for it. I call it tailpiped carburetorism. It's a term I developed, which means you learn, civilly learn the rules, and you learn how to legally take their exhaust and bend it so far around that you put it down their intake, and you get them to choke on their own exhaust gas. And you do it not by being obstreperous or being impudent, but by simply and civilly explaining their own policies to them that they didn't realize. And it's part of what Alan does with getting hoplophobia into the medical dictionary. You use their own system against them. You don't try and fight and resist. So one of the things, it's a little bit different for this topic, but I want to introduce it. It's something we're going to begin to work on in Arizona in terms of getting people with a little less of this and maybe a little more of that here at these meetings. And I can still say that maybe in a year or two I won't be able to, but right now I can with the non-gray hair on top. There's one. So I can see a few out there. And that is one way we can get people to events like this is by getting them enthused at a younger age. You know how you can do that without even getting firearms in their hands? Anybody want to take a wild guess? What device can you get in their hands that isn't the firearm, but still gets them excited about guns? Video games? Nah. Now the real thing, shoot something. Air guns. Air guns, in most places except New Jersey, which considers an air gun a firearm, in most places, air guns are nowhere near subject to the same restrictions that firearms are, but all the basic rules apply to them. And if you can get something that shoots in a kid's hands, show of hands here, who had some form of a BB gun when they were a kid? All right. By looking around here, everybody except Maria, by looking around here, it's the vast majority of the room. Why don't we work outside of our area of expertise and gather more people in with air guns? Let's work on getting our municipalities. Am I out of time? Why don't we work on getting our municipalities to legalize the discharge of an air-powered device as long as the projectile doesn't leave our property? And anything indoors is automatically okay. But any projectile that doesn't leave our own premises, why can't we get that work on getting that fixed? Or maybe let's include preemption. Let's widen preemption to include air guns, bows and arrows and slingshots. Why not work on that and get kids so enthused about the, instead of the LA Olympics being, what is it? The four seasons in LA, rain, flood, mudslide, and riot. Instead of having those being the four Olympic events, why don't we have them, the four events be slingshot, pellet rifle, BB gun, and bow and arrow? And get the kids so excited about stuff that shoots that by the time they get to firearms, you're going to have to get them into suppressed full auto before you can impress them. Thank you.
Thanks, Charles. I let you go a little longer because I knew it was your microphone. Now I'm going to bring our next speaker, Benjamin Smith, up. Benjamin?
Hey, guys. I'm Benjamin Smith. I came here, I've never been to this Second Amendment symposium here. I was coming in to talk about issues and stuff, and I started taking a look at it and trying to get something, you know, very intellectual and very forthright to what everybody here is. But I started taking a look at it, and I just want to identify first with everyone here, like, what the Second Amendment is to me, and have everybody think what it is to them, and what is its importance in our history and personally. And you might not like some of the things I might say here, probably within the next minute. But look at me. I'm an aging fella. I'm halfway through my life. I'm 40. I'm the youngest one in this room. There's a problem with that. There needs to be perpetuation of what we believe. As Reagan said, it isn't inherited. It is taught. It is passed down. The incentive to be here. How many people here have had to turn people down to come with them? Or is there any place here where there's space is limited to be here at this conference? This is Second Amendment. This is serious. This isn't just going to a convention and sitting around and talking about aim points on pistols or how many guns you have. We weren't invaded in the Second World War because Yamamoto was looking at us and he said, do not invade that country. There is a rifle behind every blade of grass. There is a seriousness to the Second Amendment, and it means everything to me. I have lived it. I've almost died protecting it overseas. And in many ways, it is part of me, part of my life. Little bit about me real quick. I was a SEAL 6 years. I was in Iraq, 05, 06. Did Horn of Africa. And I've started to get involved in not the political process. I'm not a big political guy, but in seeing where our Constitution has been going by the wayside. And what I'm not going to talk about what they're doing today. I think everybody here knows it. It's more of the results of what is happening to our Bill of Rights and understanding the Second Amendment. All of the other ones yesterday, I know Stephanie yesterday spoke about the way the First Amendment was being taken, the Ninth was being taken, the Tenth, and how most of them are already gone. But the result of it is, you know, I was supposed to be up here talking about Homeland Security and how they're going to be taking it. But I want to go back to the Second Amendment for a second. With the Second Amendment, when people are out there shooting on the range or when you're talking about it, you need to be the red meat in the conversation. That is serious because, damn it, at some point, that amendment right there, which is given to you by God, needs to be known to you, everyone around you, that they don't legislate that from you. You, your life, your right to defend yourself. If someone just walks up to you and goes to punch you in the face, what do? You raise your hand. If somebody, a government, anybody comes on your property or comes into your space and tries to shoot you, it's as simple as that. What do? You kill them first. Whether it's a government coming for your rights, coming for your goods, coming for your weapons, coming for your property, or anything that makes you an American citizen through the Constitution, those things do not get touched. And you have to understand, this isn't about hunting. This isn't about just gallantry out in the public having a weapon and being able to talk about all the cute little parts on it. This is about pulling a weapon on somebody, another person within your country, and having to pull that trigger. It is something serious that everybody has to understand. So, going to Homeland Security, I don't have to outline what they're doing now. I need not say more than Janet Napolitano's essay on right-wing extremism. When they start naming patriotic Americans, Tea Party people, conservative groups, religious groups, and veterans returning from overseas as possible terror-related groups or racists. This is your government calling you on the carpet, What they're doing is preemptively labeling you what they're going to label you down the line when they try to take your guns or put you in that cell or make turn you into that slave. This is preposterous. We're already there, people. Your Constitution has been subverted. Just take a look and look harder. It will be there. Everything has been laid out. Now, with this, I wanna take it to real time now. I have friends in the military and I talk to people and they talk back and they are patriotic Americans. They have ethical classes. They have sensitivity classes that the troops on the ground are supposed to go to. It's mandatory coming down from the government. But there's classes out there on ethics. And I just want to take you through something real quick. Think of yourself as you're with an officer. All right, 10 minutes. You're going into a house just in suburbia here. And, you're with a squad or a few of your platoon mates and you go in. The officer knocks on the door. I'll be the officer. Goes in. Hey, sir, how you doing? You mind if we come in for a second? Whether there's been a disaster, whether there's been a storm, whether there's been something. And this is what's going on in that ethics class. Goes in and says, hey, sir, how you doing? Nice day. What's going on? How's life? Are you safe? How's your family? You got any weapons in the house? You know, just for safety's sake. And, we're gonna have to confiscate those. We're gonna have to take your weapons just for safety in the area. And, and then you've got within the scenario, you've got either grandpa or dad standing there with either the shotgun or just they're standing there with like a daughter in a room with guns on a bed or guns by in a cabinet. And the officer, I turn to you and I say, grab those guns. What do you do? Under your oath to be in that military, look at the NDAA, look at all the executive orders. I forgot to set that up. They set up, without martial law, they suspend posse comitatus, where now, under Homeland Security, the police and all of those people do not get to arrest you. The military can arrest you and hold you indefinitely until the end of whatever crisis that they think necessary to define. You are held without your Bill of Rights. And that all can be prevented with the Second Amendment. But looking at you says, take those weapons. Now let's look at your oath. This is the order of the president. The president's telling you, and I'm an officer duly appointed above you, I'm telling you to take those weapons from that man. Is that right? And then at the end, there's, I will protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies both foreign and domestic. That trumps all. That trumps the first president, that trumps them all, that trumps the officer appointed ahead of you. Now, going here, and in this example, you're finding the young children, not the young children, oh my God, I'm old. The younger grunts that are there, 18 to early 20s, mid 20s, that haven't deployed, that haven't been over there and seen these things happen. What they say is, yes, sir. And, you know, if you put a little pressure on them, if they're slow on it at first, they'll eventually say, yes, sir, I will take it because that is what you say and that's what the president said. They have not been educated in what the Constitution is, how we got here as a country, and what it is to right now, and the people who are dead set against it are just chipping away. They know bombs and bullets will not take that from us. They know they have to do it by other means, by governance, by all these other groups that start taking it from us. But with this, it comes down to, like, you have older people that are like, oh no, I will abdicate it. Now, with the rules, an Article 92 will prevent a lot of people from not following what their officer says. An Article 92, in a theater of war, you can be shot on sight if you do not obey the direct order of an officer appointed above you. That is absolutely crazy. And, you know, without the person saying, I'm not fit to lead here. That's what we have to do. We have to know to do that in our hearts. And with this, with everything that goes with this, the answer is we shouldn't be in this person's house. We shouldn't be going to get their weapons. We shouldn't have even stepped off the base or been in on American soil doing operations. It's a big issue, guys. This is preposterous. Get more people here. Get younger people here. Get out and get people motivated to do this, because your country is depending on you.